Welcome to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. In this episode, Sam and Amy dive into the pressing need for regulation and accountability in the animal-assisted therapy field. They unpack the risks involved, sharing insights on professional responsibility and the importance of setting standards to protect both clients and animals. The conversation also highlights issues around misrepresentation, where unqualified dogs are marketed as therapy dogs, and why this misleads consumers and increases risk. Tune in as they discuss how industry standards can prevent harm and build trust in this growing field. Trigger warning, a dog attack is discussed in this podcast, with the outcome being a dog euthanized by police.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. We have the wonderful Amy Hodgkinson with us today. Most of you probably know Amy. If you've done our courses, you know who Amy is. We don't have Max with us again today, just scheduling difficulties. So we're having to get a little bit creative with our timetables so that we can keep bringing you guys the content that you love so much in your podcast feeds. So we just cannot keep it from you based on our scheduling difficulties. Amy is a psychologist and a teacher. She works in a high school with her dogs, Wilbur and Lucy, and she facilitates our clinical and community courses. She does our tuition for our self-paced guys, and is a integral part of the Therapy Dogs Australia team. Been with us for a few years. How long have you been with us, Amy?
It has been quite a while. Well, the maternity
years.
Leave.
Yeah, I years.
6 years?
That's a long time.
Five. So, it would have been, 5 years now.
That's a long time. It's gone really quickly, I think.
It has.
Amy does a lot of our... just helps with everything. She's involved in everything that we do. We have a small team, so everyone's pretty much involved in everything that we do. But Amy helps with things like updating our course content and, having a finger on the pulse in the industry all the time, bouncing our ideas around on, you know, our own policies and things that we are doing and what we're trying to communicate to our students and our graduated teams and all those things. Very, very passionate about the animal-assisted therapies industry.
I think that's what's good about our team too, because we are all working with our dogs and in the field and getting things right, getting things wrong, learning from those experiences. We're not just researching them and delivering new learning. So I think that's what's pretty awesome about us as a collective.
Big time. Amy has her own side business as well, Therapy Dogs and Education. So she is very passionate about providing consulting services to schools who are in the process of implementing a therapy dog program at their school. So that's a busy little thing as well. But if you're a school person, school team, it's definitely worth chatting to Amy about that stuff too, because it's a very time consuming and costly process to reinvent the wheel. One of the things about speaking to professionals that have been consulting to other teams as well is that we've not only learned from our own mistakes and successes, but we've been learning from everybody else's mistakes and successes as well. So we get to put all of that information together and provide it hopefully succinctly and convincingly to people who are just getting started, which is cool.
Yeah. You hear lots of stories, and I think that really helps you make sense of different situations and sharing those stories and learning from each other. So our courses provide lots of that opportunity to hear that, but also contribute to the discussion, because it's an evolving space.
So many stories, the good, bad, and the ugly. Lots of stories. Lots of learning opportunities provided by people that have come across our path. So yeah, good times. We're going to, one of the things that Amy is very, very passionate about is regulation in the industry. And I wanted to have a little bit of a rant about this as well. So we've come together today, we're joining our forces. We don't have a real structural plan. So we're probably just going to rant about regulation in the industry for a little while. And hopefully I'm using the AI summary tool for this Zoom meeting. So hopefully it can make some sense of
it can make it sound professional after we've spent a considerable amount of time ranting about nothing.
It's pretty good. Like, it seems to, like, it like draws out points. And like at the end of your meeting, you get to like read it and be like, oh my goodness, did I like make some good points? Thank you, AI.
Maybe we just have the rant and then just read the AI summary. And yeah. We'll just stop recording.
That's a good idea.
For everyone, and will make sense then.
Except I'd be reading the summary and then just go off again on like another.
Maxine's so good, just bringing us back in.
I know. Okay, so what made me feel a bit excited to discuss this regulation in the industry thing? First of all, where I should start actually is we get asked this question all the time. One of the things that I really hate is when people will email and say, this industry is unregulated, so why should I do your course? And I just go, delete email. No. because of a few reasons, but I'm sure we'll probably go over those, hopefully. We'll remember. The other thing is when I see on our Facebook groups, so psychologists Facebook groups and things like that, when people go, oh, I want to bring my dog into work, what do I need to do? And there is an increasing number of people saying, oh yeah, like there's a way to go about it, like da da da, and you know, providing some good information. But then there's always a number of people who are like, it's unregulated, you can do whatever you want. And I think, okay, that's terrible advice. So as psychologists especially, which Amy and I are both regulated as psychologists, so we both are under this same banner of rules, but Amy is also a teacher and dealing in the school space as well, there couldn't be anything further from the truth, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really think every time someone brings that argument up, I always say, if you're choosing to increase risk to your participant, which is what a dog is, if you are incorporating a dog in your practice, you're choosing to increase risk. So if you're choosing to increase risk because you could do your job without the dog, making a decision to choose to increase risk to your participants, you're then responsible for that risk. So if you don't know what you're doing and you've done nothing to help inform your practice, what are you going to say if something goes wrong?
I think they're planning on saying, I didn't know XYZ. And 10 years ago, I think you could have gotten away with a little bit of that. We've obviously, during the course, we discuss an article that we've got where someone was disciplined who didn't get away with it. And that was more than 10 years ago, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. What's that? When's that from? Yeah, it's from 2000 and something. I think that was a pleading ignorance, I think, was more acceptable 10 years ago. This day and age, where we are in 2024, you can Google it and get a heap of information. There's even things like this podcast that's free to access. There's just so much information available at your fingertips for free. That to be able to say, I didn't know, then whoever's holding you accountable, I'm pretty sure their next line would be, did you try and find out? Because a simple Google would have filled a gap in your knowledge there. So I don't think that that's going to be a reasonable defense. And I'm not a lawyer, but you know, I actually don't think it's going to be, you're going to get out of trouble by saying that kind of thing personally. So the reason I'm excited back to what I was going to say, the reason I'm excited a little bit to have this, I've been thinking about having this conversation, is because we actually had a bit of a fun little drama happen probably a couple months ago now, where the senior investigator from Western Australia, whatever, left me a voicemail. And I was like, oh my God, what now?
Government department, we won't give too many details, but a government department contacted.
So it was like a version of Fair Trade. I can't remember what it was called anyway, but like a version of the Office of Fair Trade or whatever. And I was like, great, because I've mentioned this a couple of times before, but I've been reported to like a lot of places over the years. And the Office of Fair Trade's one of them. So I was like, oh no, what now? But so I've got, you know, the other experience as well, which is why, so this all happened. I actually haven't been reported to anywhere in a really, really long time. Don't take that as an invitation, people. Just calm down. But
I've never been reported. Just my aunt is going, who are these people?
So there's a bit of balance. But what someone reported me to the Office of Fair Trade because they felt I was misrepresenting therapy dog certification on the website. And it was just another random dog trainer. Like, it wasn't a someone that we know, which you can do as a, you can make a complaint like that if you feel something's being misrepresented. So they contacted me and we went through the website, and I purposely hadn't used that word. I know other places that use that word and you can't use it. Like, it's, my understanding is that's a protected term and it's misleading. So anyway, they went through the website and they're like, it's not even on there. And I was like, yeah, it's, I purposely didn't put it on there. Like, it's not on there. So anyway, I didn't get in trouble. That's why I didn't get in trouble. But when someone makes a complaint, it gets, you get contacted, like it gets looked at. So yeah, I didn't get, obviously didn't get in trouble because I didn't do anything wrong. Anyway, this example of this person from WA was contacting us because some breeder who they believe to be a puppy farmer has been selling puppies, labeling them as therapy dogs. Now, I know that this happens, and we actually, I won't talk too much about it today because we should do a whole episode on, we've got a breeders education program and we've got a puppy buying guide available now. I already had the breeder education program when this guy from the government contacted me. So I thought we were in trouble for something to do with that because he was talking about breeders and puppies and therapy dogs and stuff. And I was like, oh my God. Uh-oh, already got myself in trouble with this. It was brand new. It was like, it was like 2 weeks old, the program. I was like, oh, that was quick. But anyway, so we know people are doing that. They're misrepresenting puppies as therapy dogs. That was just something that we hate though. Like, well, that was just like, we hate that. That happens. But the government guy also hates it. And he said that it's not allowed because it is false advertising. And the reason they called us is because the person, the breeder, had said that these puppies were like approved by Therapy Dogs Australia. Like, they dropped our name in there somewhere, which I was like, what? And so we had to go and check our whole breeders list and do all this investigate, blah, blah, blah. And the guy, I was like having this, because I called him straight back, which I never do because I was like freaking out. Anyway, I was like, what is happening? And I was talking to him and I was having this good old chat. And I think like we sort of cleared things up and I was like, I don't know what any of this is. And we don't approve people's puppies and we don't agree that people do that and whatever. And he was like, okay, so that's cool. And he goes, all right, well, can I get you to provide me some information on blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, okay. And he goes, I mean, I'm just asking you nicely, but to provide that, but I can make you provide it, but it's just nicer to ask nicely. And I was like, okay. I was going to do it anyway. It's like the information that he wanted was like, not like it wasn't private stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like confidential, but yeah, I was like, okay, sir.
Very compliant of you.
I know. I was like a bit excited though. Cause like, he was like, this lady's been doing this thing that we hate. Like, me and Amy complain about this all the time. Like, we hate when people do that. That's what, and like I said, I'd already created this breeders education thing. I'd already presented at the Grudel conference saying, and a part of the breeders education is, do not call puppies therapy dogs. They are not therapy dogs. They're puppies. So we already like hate this thing. And then this guy calls and he's like, there's this lady doing this thing. She said you're involved. And I'm like, no, I'm not, sir. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, we're going to take her down. And I was like, fuck yeah. So I was excited. And then I called Amy and I was like, guess what? Guess what's happening? There was crazy phone call.
I think that point you thought you were getting to wear SWAT uniform and go in, raid a property, and we talked you down from that and said, no, you're not involved in that, mate. You just give a little bit of information to help.
I was like, Amy, me and the government are going to take this lady down.
I'm down, Sam. That's not happening.
I'm on the other side of this for once. So funny. Yeah, but I was very excited, and it was a little bit fun. And then we had to do a witness statement that Amy was there for. And then the guy had to come around to my house and I had to sign it with a proper wet signature. It was all very exciting. Anyway, I just get a bit excited about stuff like that. So, because it's just a little bit of drama. I don't actually have a lot of drama in my life. So when things like this happen, I'm like, whoa.
Do you reckon they flew from WA to your house to get that signature?
They didn't, because the guy called me that had to get it, bring it out here. And he was like, what is all this about? So they sent it to him and I was like, and then he was here and I was like telling him all about it, how I was basically a crime fighter. Actually, he said we might have to go to court in WA. I was like, cool. I'll go across the Nullarbor.
Dogs as court support therapy dogs? How does that work?
Absolutely.
Road trip.
Anyway, so the problem that the guy had is the same problem that we had, which is the breeder is, so what had happened is three people that she'd sold dogs to had made complaints. And like I just said, if a complaint gets made, it gets investigated. And so the complaints that they had made is that the breeder had sold the dogs as therapy dogs, and that the dogs themselves had turned out to be just genetic disasters and basket cases and all that sort of stuff. And one was being medicated and it can't even just be a dog, and et cetera, et cetera. So they were like, well, hang on a second. This isn't a very high caliber of dog. Now, the guy from the government, the investigator man, he also has bred dogs before, and he was very knowledgeable on the fact that a puppy can't be sold as anything apart from a puppy, because there's so much that goes into raising a young dog. Like, I didn't have to have that conversation with him. Like, he knew that. And so he was like, it's ludicrous that these people have been told that it's going to be a therapy dog. Like, he's like, first of all, these dogs seem like genetic disasters. Secondly, so probably unearthed, and he had the numbers. I can't remember how many hundreds of dogs he said this lady had sold, but she had like a million ABNs and she'd sold hundreds of dogs in a short time period. And he's like, she's probably a puppy farmer. They don't have the same puppy farmer laws we have in Queensland. So it was like difficult to, they don't have Oscar's law.
But he and you think that's ludicrous.
Mm.
How many people have come to us in the course and said, I bought this dog as a therapy dog and now I'm doing the training? So they've been under the illusion for 10, 12 months that what they've bought. We've even had graduates of our course be trapped by this same thing. I don't know if you remember a German Shepherd puppy that they said, oh, I've just bought a German Shepherd puppy. It's going to be the next successor in our team. And I bought it as a therapy dog because that's what that breeder specializes in. So we've had this.
Which is ludicrous for so many reasons.
These aren't unintelligent people though.
I know.
And it's tricking loads of people. And then the massive concern as well is you've got vulnerable people that don't understand the difference between a therapy dog and an assistance dog that are paying huge money for this guarantee of a puppy that's suitable, and they call them therapy dogs because they don't understand the difference.
Mm-hmm.
We're working with really vulnerable people, but also not uneducated people either. And it's so many. So ludicrous, but yes, not ludicrous.
Because once animals get involved, like, I'm a sucker. Go read the puppy buying guide, guys. Like, go and read the stories of me buying my puppies from breeders. I am a sucker, man. That thing looks at me and maintains eye contact for half a second. I'm like, we're soulmates. I'm buying this dog. I'll sell everything I own to have this dog. Like, I get it. I totally get it. I would buy the tiger keeping away rock, you know? Like, I don't see any tigers. How much for that rock? Like, you know, I get it. Like, I totally get it that if you want something to be real, then it can, all you need is a few, it's like a confirmation bias, basically. All you need is a few little signals that, like, this is going to be real. And I'm like, you son of a bitch, I'm in. Like, I get it. Okay. Totally get it.
It's an emotion. Want a connection with the dog. Mm-hmm.
So no judgment from us, people that have bought therapy dog puppies, but big judgment from me, from breeders and whoever else that are representing them that way. But as we always say, you don't know what you don't know. And they don't know that they shouldn't do that for a variety of reasons. Some of them probably do know that they shouldn't do that, and they're just doing it anyway because they want to sell the dog. And certainly this lady, it appears to be the case, that because she sold hundreds of dogs. And then, so that's why we have our breeder education program, because it's a little four module, three or four module little program. It's still free at the time of this recording. I need to put at least an admin price on it because it's a pain in the ass, but it's still free. We've had heaps of breeders go through it who are, being better educated on these kinds of topics. But anyway, so the complaint is this person's selling these dogs as therapy dogs. The consumer has bought the dog under the pretense that it is a therapy dog, which counts as false advertising and misleading the consumer if they can prove that a therapy dog is a thing. So that's what they needed us to do a witness statement for, was to help them understand what is a therapy dog. Because if you then say that your dog is a therapy dog and it's not, then you're a liar. So I think you guys can see where this long-winded story is going, because this is why it excited me as well, is because I was like, if they get this through, like, so it hasn't gone to court, if they happen to get a precedent here, we are one step closer to, you are a liar if you are calling your dog a therapy dog and it does not fit the definition of what a therapy dog is. I'm using the word liar just to get a real emotional response out of everybody.
I think it's also not just using the terminology therapy dog or not, because how much are we hearing clinic dog, school dog, library dog? You can put an environment and then name it a dog. But if you, a therapy dog, if we think of the definition of a therapy dog, where it's interacting and providing comfort and support to lots of people under the supervision and instruction of its handler, it's not about the terminology, it's about how you're working with the dog. So if you are working in clinic and incorporating your dog, you might call it a clinic dog, but is it working in a therapy dog capacity?
Mm-hmm.
That would still be.
And how does the consumer understand the role of the dog? That's really important. So if you're representing the dog as a benefit to your consumer, start thinking about your websites, start thinking about your social media posts. If you are representing this dog as a benefit to your consumer under XYZ ways. Now remember, engagement is one of the main things that our dogs do. That's one of the main things that they do. So even if you're representing the dog as an engagement tool, that is therapy dog work.
Yeah. Okay?
So if the consumer understands the dog to be providing therapy dog type role, then is it that big of a stretch to say that you've misrepresented the dog?
I think it's about access. If you are providing access to your dog, whether it's an enhancement, whether the dog is a participant, whether the dog, if the dog is involved and accessible in any capacity, you're representing that dog in a therapy dog capacity. And that's deceptive if you're not skilled, knowledgeable, aware to do that.
And so, like, it seems like unregulated because everything is fine. And that's the thing. Everything's fine until it's not fine. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, we're in trouble because we did XYZ. So all the stuff that we're saying now, like, we're drawing a bit of a bow, but I don't think it's a huge bow to draw to say, okay, well, this senior investigator dude is pretty pissed off at this lady for saying that these puppies are therapy dogs, and he's trying to fine her. They're trying to, you know, penalize her for misrepresenting the dog by calling it a therapy dog when it's not a therapy dog. I think that's not that long of a bow to draw to go, okay, ex allied health provider. So you presented the dog as a therapy dog, a well-being dog, a whatever dog, and consumer, whoever, X, they have got a problem with the way that the dog, whatever, and they think you've misrepresented your service, and therefore they want all their money back, and they want whatever, and you're getting fined and blah, blah. I'm making all that up. But I don't think it's that long of a bow to draw to go, I reckon that there's some standards here, and I think that you can probably get in trouble for some stuff that you didn't know about.
And I think you've got to weigh up. We've got regulation, which comes from government and law.
Mm-hmm.
And in the absence of that, can we do whatever we want? Or do we have civil responsibility and we've got professional responsibility? So what sort of hot water do you get into if you're taking this lovely dog, clinic dog, lovely family pet to work, school, wherever you are, private practice, and you're working with your dog and something goes wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What leg do you then have to stand on? You may not end up in prison, or you might. There might be some gross negligence. There might be, like, there could be problems. Mm-hmm. But also, what about civil action? What about a lawsuit? What about navigating all of that? Where does your insurance provider sit? They might have given you insurance or issued insurance, but they're not going to ask for evidence. They're not going to ask for how you practice. They're not going to ask necessarily for your risk assessment until they need that information.
Mm-hmm.
To gather some protections for you. So I think regulation is a much bigger topic than just looking at government regulation. I think we really need to also think about our professional risks that we carry. And I know that I could very confidently have a conversation with my insurance provider if something went wrong, to talk about all of the prevention and proactive steps that are in place and my skills and who assesses my skills and who has put eyes on the dog and who has assessed my dog. So it's not just me going, I love my dog and it's beautiful and it's a wonderful family pet and it's never hurt anyone. I think my clients would love it.
Mm.
That's not the end of my risk assessment.
How often do we get people that bring us dogs and they think that? And then a dog trainer meets the dog and they're like, this dog is literally on the edge. Like this... This dog is one trigger away from an absolute mental breakdown or a becoming dangerous. Like, but this is the problem, is that you don't necessarily know what you don't know. And it's not going to be an excuse to go, hey, so I thought my dog was friendly, and that's why I took it into my workplace and represented it as a therapy slash whatever dog and had people interacting with it. And it's not my fault that someone poked it in the eye and then it bit them.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, you know, there's a fair bit to unpack there, but what at that point that Amy's making is right, is that we're opening this conversation by saying, okay, so the government agency, so the advertising, fair trade, whoever, was like one of those departments, they have taken issue with this. Like I said, they've taken issue with me over someone reporting something before. So I already knew. So I already talk about fair trade all the time because I already knew that they can just, you can get reported for stuff. So we already talk about this stuff during our courses and stuff because we know that it can happen. But it is certainly, in my opinion, a development when the Office of Fair Trade, whoever they are in Western Australia, is calling us for an expert witness statement to say, okay, so we need you to tell us what a therapy dog is so that we can go back to the judge and say, well, these guys are the experts. They've told us what a therapy dog is. This chick's selling dogs, calling them therapy dogs, and those dogs don't meet that criteria. Therefore, she's a big fat liar and she should get sued and penalized and blah, blah, blah. I think that that's a warning. This is a red flag. That is a warning. And it would be remiss of us not to share that information because we're privy to it. I think we need to share this kind of information to let people know, hey, these guys care about stuff. If someone reports you for misrepresentation of your service, you will be investigated for that. So you will either be found to have not represented your service, that was me, or hopefully you'll be found that you, at this chick in Western Australia, the breeder, hopefully she has found that she has misrepresented her service because she has caused a lot of drama for a lot of people by saying that those dogs are therapy dogs. There's websites where you can type in buy a therapy dog puppy, and there's websites that you can buy puppies that are misrepresented as therapy dogs. It's just ludicrous. Okay, so we've covered Office of Fair Trade. So if you think you're not regulated, all right, Office of Fair Trade is going to have some different opinions about that. If client X calls up and says, this person said they were offering whatever animal assisted service and it was bullshit. They didn't let my child interact with the dog, whatever, blah, 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 blah. Someone's going to be calling you. They're going to be leaving you voicemails and you'll have to call them straight back and you'll be peaking. So just be aware of that. They'll send an email as well. Office of Fair Trade, tick. Amy has brought up your insurance company. Some of the things that insurance companies, this has escalated over the last, how many years, Amy, do you reckon since insurance companies started asking us more questions?
Yeah, definitely in the last 2 years, I think we get more frequency of questions and to the point where some insurance companies have been so concerned about people taking dogs into settings such as schools without having appropriate training and experience and incidents happening. And they go, oh, well, we're just not going to insure that until we have a conversation around, hold up, don't just blanket put a foot down on the whole industry. Start looking at how risk mitigation and appropriate setups can support the safety of students and the well-being of the dog. So loads of questions. My insurance provider actually asked for a copy
certificates.
Certificates. Yeah. And a copy of a risk assessment. And I was so excited. I was like, yes. Because of what
they asked for the risk assessment. Yeah. Did they?
And that was only this year. I was like, yes. Thank you. Thanks for asking for this. Because it means that people have to stop and think, hold on. What don't I know?
What do you mean risk assessment? Why do I need that? What certificate? What are you talking about?
My dog's never hurt anyone before. Isn't that enough?
I'm renewing my insurance at the moment. I've got the quote in my inbox. I was supposed to do it today, but I didn't. But you just reminded me every year you have to remind them that you do animal assisted stuff. And we actually had, so Therapy Dogs Australia's insurance company chose, they didn't want to renew my equine workshop insurance. And so I was like, fine, just like, and I leave everything to the last minute. So I was like, fine, just take it off. And they were like, oh, they came back. I was using a broker. They came back and they were like, oh, even with it off, they just don't want to do it. Like, so all of so I had my equine workshop insurance included under Therapy Dogs Australia's insurance. And then they came back and said, oh no, we just don't want to do it. They don't want to do it anymore.
But that was not because of something that you'd done or complaints or anything.
No, it's just a renewal. Just a renewal. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, just find me an insurance company and just don't worry about the equine. Cause I wasn't running workshops. I'm not running those at the moment. I will, but I just haven't been, cause we're busy. So anyway, I was like, just don't worry about that for now, because it was like, your insurance is going to expire in like 2 days. I'll sort that out after. We'll sort it out later, you know, but like, don't worry about that right now. Just get me some flipping insurance. And she had trouble. Get the broker getting our insurance. And I think I had to pay like quite a bit more. And again, I was like, oh, I'll just sort it out later, which I haven't done. But anyway, so that's happened. We actually had one of our course participants have a real issue with insurance. She could not get a policy to do, I can't remember, but there was either she wanted to do some paid work and volunteer work. And there was one of them that they wouldn't cover. Can't remember which one, or there was like one place that was going to do it, but it was exorbitant, like very, very high premium. And she was like, this is outrageous. Like, I'm just not going to be able to do it. Like, it's just ridiculous. She ended up getting a policy. I can't remember all the details, but anyway, she had troubles with it. And I was like, far out. They told her that this is a result, like no one wants to touch it. So this person is a very intelligent person who I'm talking about. I'm not going to give details, but I talked to her a fair bit. So she's a very intelligent human being, qualified in a number of fields. And they came back to her and said, no one wants to touch it because that dog bit that kid in the face at that school in New South Wales. If you're interested in the email, the information about that, it is Google, kid bites, school dog bites kid, New South Wales. You'll find it. So that was only last year. It was 2023 that happened. So we're starting to see the flow on from that. I had another person who their insurance company came back with a list of questions. All of them are asking for certificates. All of them are asking for the certificates. They came back with a list of questions on what was the training that you did? Where's your certificate? And they had questions about, was the training face-to-face, online, how many hours of training was involved in the training, et cetera, et cetera. So they were able to get insurance, but I was very surprised at the extent of the questions that were coming through. That was the most extensive I've seen. That was a couple of months ago.
I think some insurance providers still aren't asking questions, but I know that they will, and they'll absolutely ask questions if things go pear-shaped. And I think that's not a position that you want to be trying to navigate. Well, what should I have been doing? What should I have known? All of those things. And I think probably the reason that continues to drive me to be so passionate about this field is running the course, which we run all throughout the year, and consistently week two, week three, people go, I can't believe how much I didn't know what I needed to know. Yep. Those that are working with their dogs are like, whoa, I'm going to have to do things completely differently. Mm-hmm. And you're like, but I'm so glad that you're making that decision. Mm-hmm. And this is going to work better for the safety of your participants and also for the well-being of your dog. Blows their mind because they think they're coming for a 5-day course or a 4-day course, and they're like, what's there to know? And then they're like, whoa, we didn't know. We're so grateful that we've got this knowledge. And they write that in the feedback, and you go, yes.
I was just going to say, if you don't believe us, go and look at the feedback testimonial thingamajiggies. How often is that mentioned in there? Like, there was so much information covered. I had no idea. You don't know what you don't know, et cetera. And honestly, I'm same as you, Amy. Like, it motivates me so much. Like, I am not bored of this job at all.
I'm not bored. Oh my God, this is making such a difference. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things is the difference for the dogs. Mm-hmm. The welfare of the dogs astronomically improves when you're armed with information. And for me, if the welfare of the dog improves, safety for participants improves.
Exactly.
Happier dog that's enjoying the work. Oh, it just blows your mind.
What about the number of people, Amy, that go through and then go, oh my God, my dog's not going to like this job?
No. Or the ones that go, I've been working with my dog for a couple of years now, and I'm just realizing my dog doesn't like this job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a hard realization.
It's one of my favorite things to hear, even though it is devastating for the human being.
But when they make the realization and they prioritize their dog, oh, it's amazing.
I know. It's like when people do that, say that, whatever, I just think, you know what? Job well done to us. We're not trying to scare people out of this industry. We want more people in the industry. So people are probably going to listen to this podcast who haven't booked in with us for a course yet. And they're probably going to be like, oh my God, like there's so much risk. Oh my God. That's not our intention. We want you to book into the course. Like, we obviously want the business. Like, that's obviously what we're trying to achieve. But it would be remiss of us to not share the true information around it needs to be done professionally. It needs to be done properly. None of us are perfect. I don't know. My dog could bite someone this afternoon. I don't know. Like, I do everything I can to avoid those things happening. But I'm not going to sit here and say my dogs are never, ever going to do something, you know, unreasonable, whatever, like what, you know, that I, whatever. It's not to say that we can totally eliminate all risk. That's not the point. Dogs are dogs. But the point is, if you're going into this without doing your due diligence in terms of gathering information and getting expert advice on this, exactly what Amy said right at the beginning, you are increasing the level of risk to your client. You need to show that you've mitigated that. And you need to show why you've increased the risk. Why did you do X activity with the client, given that it had increased risk? Well, because I believed the client was going to benefit in Y way. So that's why I even considered taking the risk. And also I mitigated the risk with these steps over here. That's what it boils down to. It's pretty much as straightforward as that, really.
What that also means for me as a clinician and a professional, I love incorporating my dog because I know what's in place and I can manage and support my dog and I can manage and support the interactions that are happening. So walking away with the skills and the confidence, I think, is actually healthier for us rather than walking in feeling worried and stressed and overwhelmed and saying there's too much risk and I'm carrying too much and all of those. That's not what it's about either. That's why we have a skill component in what we're doing, and we have an ethics component in what we're doing. I know this isn't about the course, but I think for me, it's about bringing that together because risk is a scary thing. And when you start talking, oh, holy moly, maybe this is too much. Sometimes I think people are worried about the wrong things and you can alleviate some of their concerns. Oh, my dog's not suitable because of this. And you're like, oh, that's not something we're worried about. Mm-hmm. But these are the things that we're worried about. So I think equally you have people that go, I really don't think my dog's going to pass, and you can support them to go, well, dog's gonna be fine.
Heaps times I've been like, I love that dog, I'd work with that dog, like, I think that dog's great,
and they worry because their dog's silly or their dog's goofy or their dog's too playful. I'm like, it's okay, mate.
The allied health field especially, like, but whatever fields people are in, this is probably relevant, but there's an element of risk that we have to mitigate day by day anyway. Like, this is the field that we're in. Like, there's consequences for the things that we say and do. So we're constantly doing that. Like, I can just see this as, if you are incredibly risk averse, I don't think animal assisted therapy is for you, because having that thought pattern as your go-to kind of baseline pattern, I think can cause a lot of stress in the interactions between the dog and the client. And I don't think that that's necessarily helpful in supporting the dog. And I don't think it's necessarily beneficial to the client. So we don't want, you know, if you're incredibly, incredibly risk averse, and we have had people do the course before and be like, this is just too much for me. And I think if you've made that decision, then probably it's too much for you. But we also don't want the people that are super high risk takers that are like, she'll be right about everything. And I mean, that level of risk taker, we get a couple through our courses that we highlight and go, oh my goodness, like, I don't know if this person's taking this seriously. But the majority of those guys, we don't even see them because they're not doing courses. They're just cowboying out there with their dogs. We're really looking for that middle ground of being risk averse, but not letting it totally stop you from doing awesome things, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, so I think having that level of balance in that space is really important. And these things that we're discussing today are to support you in how to balance out the risk aversion. You know, if you're going like, oh my God, it's so risky, like, then okay, but here are some steps you can take that make it less risky. Or if you're on the higher end of that those parameters and you're like, hell yeah, this is going to be sick, like, awesome. And we go, yes, it is. However, also, here are a few steps that you need to take to make sure it's awesome and fully sick, but also fully safe. So this is why this is the goal that we have of like having these steps, is to support people on both the upper, you know, more risky and the more risk averse, more risk takers and more risk averse kind of people. So insurance companies are going to be a regulator, who's to say that if you've told your dog, some people, I've seen people say online, yeah, just ring your insurance company and tell them that you're working with a dog and they'll be fine. They'll just add it. Well, they may, you might get someone on Tuesday afternoon 4:45 who just adds it to your certificate of currency without asking the questions that they were supposed to ask you. But I can guarantee you somewhere in those terms and conditions on that waiver that you've signed without reading, which I do too, if you've signed it without reading it, it says full disclosure is your responsibility. That's what it says on all the other insurance documents. Full disclosure is your responsibility. And what if they come back? So your dog bites someone and they're trying to sue you and you go to your insurance company like, oh, God, thank God I've got insurance, guys. You guys are going to have to pay for this kid's plastic surgery. And they go, oh, okay, yeah. Well, were you working with your therapy dog? And you go, yeah. It's on my insurance. And they go, oh, okay, cool. Where's your certificate? And you go, I don't have a certificate. No one asked me for one. And they go, oh, well, that's what a therapy dog is. A therapy dog is a dog that's been trained with a handler to work alongside them to provide support and blah, 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 blah. Because they've Googled it. If you Google it, what is a therapy dog? They'll just Google it and go, well, a therapy dog is this. And then you go, well, I trained them at home. And they go, okay, well, it says they've got to be trained and assessed by a professional, an industry professional. And you go, well, I didn't know that. And they go, oh, well, why were you doing something that you didn't know anything about? And you go, because such and such on the Facebook group said that I could. And they go, we don't know that person. They haven't taken out an insurance policy in your name. Sorry, no deal.
You know what else they say? Oh, the client signed a consent form. The client signed a consent form, so they consented to having the dog there. So everything's fine. But a consent form doesn't protect you. And I think it's a total tangent. I don't know if you're going to tolerate this tangent, but I think about the Titanic submersive. So we've just heard about this. I know, don't laugh. Hilarious. The Titanic submersive unregulated industry. Going down and diving in a little capsule and going down to see the Titanic unregulated industry. Who would have thought that would have been unregulated? Consent forms in that scenario have not protected the provider because there's a big lawsuit around gross negligence now. And I just see the parallels in our field as well as we unpack going down to visit the Titanic and it being an unregulated industry. And people are saying, we didn't think that that capsule was going to be safe. We didn't think that just having a dog at the workplace without doing any training would be safe. It doesn't actually take them a whole lot of evidence to prove gross negligence. And that, I think, is one of the risks in this space is the gross negligence. I didn't know, so I didn't do. I haven't done training. I haven't had someone assess the suitability of my dog aside from me loving my dog. That's your gross negligence.
And it's hard, like, until we get a precedent, it's hard to know exactly what's going to happen. And that's why, you know, this government investigator dude thing situation was like, oh my goodness, like we could get a precedent here. This could be a precedent. We're not going to know fully. And every situation is going to be different, right? So I don't want people to think, oh my gosh, like I'm just opening myself up to this massive amount of risk and there's no way that I can mitigate it. Because yes, having things like consent forms and stuff like that is one of the ways. It's one of the pieces of the puzzle in the picture. Writing on there that people consent, what are you writing on your consent form if your dog's not a therapy dog? I consent to pat the clinician's pet dog. Like what? You know, are you writing things in there about animal assisted therapy and stuff like that? Because if you're writing animal assisted therapy in there, are you not then representing your dog as a therapy dog in the subtext of that? Because I think you might be. I think that if the client would have a reasonable case to argue that they assumed that the dog was an approved therapy dog because you said that you were doing animal assisted therapy, that's what they consented to.
Also implies that you as a clinician know what you're doing in terms of animal assisted service and not creating ruptures in relation, you know, not contributing negatively to
Exactly. So if it can't be informed consent, if the client wasn't given all of the information and a part of the information in this day and age, 2024, where therapy dogs are everywhere and the general public is developing an understanding that a therapy dog means that it's a safe and friendly dog that's here for the benefit of you. If you have something in your consent form or whatever to get them to sign their risk away, okay, but how did you write that in there if your dog's not a trained and assessed therapy dog? How are you writing anything about animal assisted therapy in your consent form if you haven't been trained in animal assisted therapy? How are you, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand what you would possibly be writing in there. And I don't think that it's informed consent. Again, I'm making this up, but I don't think it's informed consent if the client isn't made fully aware this dog has not been trained and assessed as a therapy dog. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that it would be reasonable, if I was the judge, I think it would be reasonable for the client, who's the vulnerable person, to assume that you, psychologist, who's calling this dog the clinic dog or well-being dog or support dog or whatever you've made up, if you're calling them that, I think it's reasonable for the client to assume that the dog has gone through some kind of process to be vetted for this job.
Yeah.
That's what I think. So therefore, your consent forms, I think, need to outline the dog has not been trained for XYZ rather than just omitting info. I don't know if that's going to save you. I don't know. We don't know. We've got no precedence on this. I don't know. If you've already been in trouble for this, contact us and you can come on and tell us your story, because I don't know. I don't know this one. I don't think we have this information, this level of information yet, but I certainly think that given what the investigator said about it was the definition of a therapy dog. This is a recognized term. Remember when during the witness statement and they were all upset? Why did they get upset? Because we said something wasn't, it's like there's not a accreditation or something that we said that like, we're like, oh, that we, this industry is not at this level of whatever. Regular. Yeah, something like that. And they were like, oh, the wind went out of their sails because that's like what they were hanging the case on. But I made it really clear to them that the term therapy dog is very much accepted in the literature. So if you Google what is a therapy dog, your answers that you find will be super, super consistent because the terminology is very much accepted across the literature of what that means. And then their sails filled back up with wind again. And they're like, okay, we think we can work with that. So that was just really interesting to me to go, okay, well, so is that what your insurer is going to come back and say? And now we can extend this conversation out to, okay, so, all right, we've got Office of Fair Trade, we've got your insurance company. What about APRA? I think they might say something similar.
And so you're going to be defending a fair few interested parties should something go pear-shaped, I think. Or even if it doesn't go pear-shaped, but you just have an interested client that starts asking questions to try and better understand what you're offering and wants to alert people.
How many people have we got booked into courses or have had this year? But we've got our courses for the rest of the year booked out, Amy. How many people have we got that are taking dogs into workplaces already? And on their application form, it's like, why do you want to do this training? And they're like, because someone's making me. Because they've been taking the dog and then someone has said, has this dog done any training? And they've been like, nope. And then they've gone, well, you need to go and get something done with this dog. And so they end up, you know, they're probably with other providers as well, but they end up with us and they're like, my boss is making me do this. Like,
times have we had people in the course that are saying, I haven't started working with my dog yet, but there's already a dog at the clinic.
Yes.
Or whatever. And they're like, and I don't like what I'm seeing. So I'm just trying to learn more. And then you see them kind of unpack over 4 or 5 weeks. They're like, how am I going to address this with my manager? Completely unruly arrangement happening. And I think this is where people really need to think about, why am I doing this? Am I doing this? It's great if you're doing it because someone else is asking you to do it, because come along, it'll be loads of fun and you'll learn heaps. And I had someone thank me. They were like, I didn't want to be here, but I'm so grateful I came, and it will just change the way we practice, which is great.
But like, that's, I was saying, sometimes they're my favorite people because they're actually the toughest nuts. Like, you know, like that really can be the toughest situation, is if you don't think you need to learn any of this shit. And then these chicks log into Zoom and we're just like, blah, blah, dogs, blah, blah, responsibility, blah, blah, blah. And by the end of it, you're like, actually, that's pretty convincing. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Why we just have to keep doing it and getting that word out there. But it's those that go back and then go, oh, this needs to improve. I've got to have some difficult conversations in order to set up the arrangement I think I should be setting up.
Absolutely. I totally agree what you're saying. Those people, if you're listening, still come along. Like, gone are the days we used to be pretty judgy on people's applications, like when they would be like, I'm already working with my dog, and we'd be like, oh, you're a disgrace to the industry. Like, that would just be our private conversation amongst ourselves. You're a disgrace. What a disgrace. Who do these people think they are? Like, blah, blah, blah. But it's so common. Like, we're over it, you know? Like, we're over it.
The attitude changes to, I'm so glad you're here.
Totally. Because
now you can learn what you don't learn and what you didn't know, and we'll just support you with those aha moments. And those people have got great things to bring, because they go, oh, I can talk from experience around how I've worked with my dogs. We don't give them a hard time.
Sometimes they have the craziest stories too.
Which is awesome. Doesn't matter what you've done up until this moment. I think it's about recognizing, what do I need to do from here? Some people have planned this out years in advance too. They've started thinking before they get a dog, and then they're coming asking questions about what to do, and then they're planning for years ahead around how they're going to work. And that's cool to watch too. Really, really cool.
We've got people in the course at the moment, Amy. I know, I keep cutting you off. Sorry. I've got people in the course at the moment who have been with me since puppy school.
And you can tell, because they're just bringing that depth of learning with their dogs as well. Yeah, it's always a mixed bag. It's loads of fun.
I had to say that within my training group on Monday, because I had that person in my group and miles ahead of the teams. And we tell people, don't compare yourself. You know, everyone's on their own journey and all that sort of stuff. Some people have had access to the videos for longer and all that sort of thing. But I had to highlight. I was like, just so you guys know, this person did puppy school with us and has been doing adolescent. They've been training with us for nearly a year. So that's why this looks a bit different. But like, yeah, really good progress with their dog.
But I think that's the celebration too, because teams, once you explain that we're not comparing you to each other, you're actually coming in here wherever you're starting. And our goal is to progress from wherever you started. That's our goal. And we can take the time to get there. When they stop comparing, but they can take each dog and the team on their own merits, I think that's really nice, because they can go, oh my God, that team's amazing. That's where we start to be in 6 months, 12 months, whatever you plan. And then they can also acknowledge the circus of, we've not done any dog training before and this is where we're at. And it's a circus, and that's okay. It's okay to start there as well.
So we had someone do the last course who like enrolled halfway through the first day of the course. So last minute enrollment. And I was like, I was doing the admin because Emily was on holidays. And I was like, I'll let you in the course. we can catch up. Cool.
Amy running it, and we'll just give her this curveball.
Yeah. I was like, Amy, got a late one. So anyway, she's done the course, saw her on Monday for our dog school, and so much progress. Like, so that's like a late last minute person. Yeah. So way behind, right? And then issues with the dog. It's had a little bit too much freedom to make silly choices. So anyway, we've been guiding through not just our, you know, assessment exercises, but also dealing with some problem behaviors. But we've also referred to one of our dog trainers that we know in her area. And I saw her on Monday and she was like, oh my goodness, this dog's made so much progress. The dog trainer that I'm working with is amazing. Like, all this stuff is amazing and blah, blah, blah. And I messaged her trainer and she was like, nice work. And she was like, oh my gosh, I'm just like, she'd spoken to her this week as well. She was like, she's on cloud nine, like the student, because she's just in the space of like, okay, so what course was that? What month is this? November. So that was the October one.
Yeah.
So in the space of, oh no, we're in the October one now. That's right. It was in September. In the space of a month, the progress that has been made is just so exciting to see. So, you know, sometimes we get people that have been working with us for a year. Sometimes we get people that have been working with us for a month. We love it all. So don't let that hold you back at all. Anyway, back to our topic. So Regulation. So we do get people in there, you know, they're telling stories, their employer's making them do it, someone's making them do it, whatever. Yep, that's cool. You can tell us that. Like, we're not offended by that. Those days are over. We've just accepted the greater goal. So we used to be more offended by that stuff because I think this is, I can speak for both of us in saying we care a lot about this industry, and we strongly suspect that when someone stuffs it up, when something bad happens, and hey, it might be me, so sorry in advance if it is me, but anyway, something bad happens and then we're all in trouble. Okay. Yeah. So that's what we are trying to avoid, because I truly believe in the power of animal assisted therapies. I am so passionate about it. I've been doing it for like over 10 years, and the amount of times that I have seen people's lives changed because of it, I am sold down the river. Like, I am 100% an advocate. That's why we do this, because we're trying to get more teams out there, because I strongly, strongly believe that there is a massive benefit available to our client groups and our colleagues and to ourselves and blah, 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 right? Okay. So I strongly, strongly believe that. Very passionate. And I want people to be well-informed, and to go out there and make good choices, because you're not just representing yourself and your dog and your workplace, you are representing our entire industry. Yeah. And we will be lumped in all together if something goes wrong. And whatever it is that goes wrong, I think that the people who are in charge of getting you in trouble will, and making rules and stuff, I think they'll pick apart your situation. And they'll be like, okay, what this person did, they did it the wrong way. So everyone's doing it this way, you're out, or whatever. I don't know how they make those rules. I think, I don't know. We maybe just start a GoFundMe and we bribe someone who's a politician, I think is how.
Don't endorse that. We don't endorse.
I don't know how it works, but it seems like that might be it. But I don't know. So.
Do not do a podcast on politics, please.
It's probably blackmail. What if we.
Stop.
Fine. Anyway, so I'll stay out of the politics because I don't know how it works, obviously. But someone's going to make a decision on our behalf at some point, and we're all going to be in big trouble. And that was nearly the insurance companies. If you guys can't get insurance, if we can't get insurance, we're in big trouble. And the insurance companies are starting to, like, when our friend was like, they are like not wanting to touch us with all. Like, I didn't get my equine workshop insurance. I don't have it. Like,
but they don't want to pay out. They are going to have to pay out if they can't win the case. So insurance, they don't want to cover that. Mm. They don't want to cover unreasonable risk. So we have to prove to them that there's not unreasonable risk. Mm. It's the whole thing.
It's a lot. It's a big responsibility. I'm getting stressed. Maybe we should all stop doing this.
No, Sam.
Okay, change my mind.
Emotional roller coaster. That
it's
is
very stressful. I feel like we could revisit the blackmail thing.
No, we just need to know what we're doing and make really good decisions and do training and keep up to date with our training. And I'm confident that we're on a good path. Don't unravel this.
Sounds close-minded to me, but okay. I don't know if you're willing to explore all the options. So I'm questioning your passion. Really? Just honest. Just really.
The rest of this podcast will be with Amy. I had to go.
Oh, Sam's internet stopped out. That's weird. Okay. So this is why we're harping on about it, right? Now, you know who else I think could potentially be involved in the regulation of a quote unquote unregulated industry? Dangerous dog laws. Now, I don't know anything slash much about dangerous dog laws at this rate, but I have heard other people discussing on podcasts that they are very serious in some states. And if your dog hurts somebody, big fines, like big fines.
Yeah.
And possible jail time. Have you heard that?
Hmm.
Well, that's a concern. These things go to court sometimes. So anyway, I was listening to
not adhering. So if your dog is found to be malicious or dangerous, and they make those decisions, they base that on the evidence or the information that they receive, they make that decision, and then your dog is under conditions. If it's not euthanized, it's under conditions. And if you don't adhere with those conditions, they would consider that you're at fault.
I think maybe you can get fined if your dog hurt somebody and you were being reckless. I think that's a part of the court, and I don't think it's in every state or council. I think it depends where you are, because it was like a passing comment that I heard in another podcast. And I was like, what? So there's like a tribunal or whatever. There's like a tribunal or a judge or whatever. Because when you get charged with a dangerous dog offence, my understanding is the council comes around and they're like, I'm in Moreton Bay Council. I'm pretty sure this is how it goes here. They come around and they're like, this is a dangerous dog. We've had a complaint. And if you go, okay, then they go, all right, so you have to keep this dog behind 6-foot fences. You have to have this sign on your fence. You can't take the dog out unless it's wearing a muzzle, etc. Right? And then if you break those rules, I think you can get a fine. But I think that there is also a case where, like, if your dog rips off someone's arm, did you read that newspaper article I sent to you?
Oh my gosh, I did.
It's in the Courier Mail. Okay, so I was scrolling. Courier Mail, you have to buy, right? So I'm scrolling in the morning and it's like, my dog ripped off my arm and I don't blame him. And I was like, you got me, clickbait, but it's behind a paywall. And I was like, well, obviously I don't care enough to pay for it. So I was like, whatever. But I really wanted to know. So I Googled it to see if someone else had it for free, like on their thing. And no, couldn't find it. So I was like, damn. But I was going to the clinic. This is yesterday. I had to get fuel. I walked into the fuel station and they had a Courier Mail stand at the door. This chick's on the front page with a missing arm. And I'm like, you got me. I'll give you $3 I paid for this article. You owe me $1.50 because I shared it with you. So.
That's a midweek Courier Mail. That's prices are really going up.
I literally said that to Garth when I got home. I was like, $3.
Last time I paid for the paper, midweek paper, I'm sure it was a dollar.
I said $1.20. So, because Garth was like, didn't it used to be 20 cents? And I was like, okay, mate. I said, I think the last time I bought a paper, it was $1.20. But anyway, so why did I say that? Because I said if your dog rips someone's arm off, that's unlikely. That's unlikely. I won't go into why, do you think people want to hear the story? Okay. So the dog, her neighbor, this is what's in the Courier Mail. The neighbor kicked her door, allegedly. Her neighbor kicked her door.
There was another article. I'll have to send it to you because I shared it with a friend and a friend shared me the other article. So I forgot to keep you in the loop of the articles, but there is more.
About the same story? Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'll say what I know and then you say what you know. Okay. This is like gossip. It's good. Okay. So as if anything in the newspaper is not gossip. But allegedly the neighbor kicks a door, this lady's door. She got broken into last week. Whatever reason, make up your own reasons. The neighbor kicks her door. The dog goes off. She opens the door and is, I think, either holding the dog back or something. She opens the door and the dog bites her on the arm, on one arm. She yells at the dog or whatever, tells it to let go. It lets go, bites her on the other arm. And on this arm goes pull, 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 pulls back, bang, arm pops off. So just below the elbow. And then she somehow got out of the house. I guess the dog had the arm, so you just run away. I don't know. And shuts the door and goes out into the front yard and calls an ambulance. The neighbors are gone. So, oh no, that's right. The other neighbor threw a knife
over
the fence.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is when the dog had bitten the arm, the first arm. And then the neighbor throws a knife over the fence. I don't know if that was so that she could defend herself against the dog, or I don't know what that was about. But she said that the knife hitting the ground triggered the dog, bit her other arm. And then we had this escalation. For those playing at home, that is a classic case of redirected aggression. But you can Google that if you want more information. But that is just a classic case of redirected aggression. Okay, fill in the gaps. What have you got?
I think the only additional stuff was that the neighbour, she'd had this altercation with the neighbour, so there'd obviously been a whole lot of yelling, whatever. He'd come and kicked in the door, and so they're both, like, you know that
there's going to be
lots happening, and then the dog has turned on her, and then she's had to respond. But she, what was weird about this other article, which was on Seven News,
That would have been free.
She had to call. So the neighbour has thrown a knife over the fence. It's obviously a wonderful neighbourhood. And then people have retreated back to their houses because they're hearing this debacle and freaking out. She had to call the Triple O herself when she had no arm.
She's sitting out on her front yard bleeding out from her arm, and she had to call Triple O herself because all the neighbours just went inside, which is a wild situation. I think that gives us a bit of context, I think, to make up some reasons why we think maybe this kind of thing was happening. I think maybe this neighbourhood has seen some shit like this before. Yeah,
going a lot.
I think there's a lot on. Yeah.
So her quote is, "I have no ill feelings towards my dog. I love my dog. I love him now."
The dog is no longer with us. He had to be shot by the police. And she's very sad about that. But she blames bad breeding. It was something cross dingo, cross ridgeback, cross something. Bullarab cross.
Arab ridgeback dingo.
Bull breed apparently crossed with dingo. I've no comments on that. But anyway, she loved the dog, and then it bit her arm off. Still loves the dog, misses the dog. But, you know, very tragic. That's a case of redirected aggression. Bummer for her. She's pretty happy. If you look it up, she's got a smile on her face. She's feeling pretty good about prospects. Great. No good. That's not a good situation. We're trying to avoid that. Let's say, dangerous dog laws. Let's say your dog, you're out walking your dog off lead, and it runs up to someone in the street, and it just pulls her arm off. She reckons it was quick ass. Pull, pop. I know, horrendous. Amy's having a conniption. Horrendous.
I just didn't need you to describe it in that way.
Just no good.
Don't repeat that.
It's not good. So you have to put a trigger warning on the podcast. Just as quick as that, comes someone seriously injured from your dog. I think you can be charged for that. I think you can. I think some dog laws have changed in some places, and I think you can get jail time for that. I think.
But how much is that seemingly happening, that people have their dogs off lead and you take your dog for a walk, and how many dogs are we hearing? Every week, every suburb seems to have a dog attack like that. Meaning they're vulnerable. You've got your dog on a lead and you're being like, it's just horrible.
It is horrible. But I'm just throwing that one in out there as well. I do think that there are dangerous dog laws in certain areas where you can be held certainly responsible for your dog's behaviour if you are found to be negligent. So that was the point that I was sort of trying to get to, is if you have been found to be negligent in that you are walking your dog with no lead, or you've got not sufficient fencing and your dogs are getting out and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Then you're found to be negligent because you're not keeping the dog contained. It's a dangerous dog. You're not keeping it contained, whatever. Maybe you didn't know it was dangerous, whatever. I think you can be held responsible for that. So just throwing that out there as another option for potentially being held accountable. So what is regulation? Being held accountable, I think. It includes being held accountable for your actions. I think the broader idea of what regulation is a set of rules that will be enforced. And that's probably correct, really.
Yeah.
However, I can see where people get stuck is because we don't have a set of rules, and we don't have like one body that's enforcing those sets of rules. Okay. So I can see where the confusion is. However, I don't think that means that you can do whatever you want without consequence.
No.
What I think it means, given all this information that we've just given about these different bodies and things like that, haven't even really started on APRA, but anyone who's registered with APRA knows that it's serious business. Like you need to be pretty careful with the things that you do. If you can be held accountable for your actions and you can be disciplined for your actions, then I think that is a form of regulation. It's a form of responsibility, duty of care. We refer to all the time, best practice, et cetera, et cetera, all those things. I think it's really important that we understand that when someone comes along and tries to hold you accountable for your actions because someone's been harmed either psychologically or, you know, you've misrepresented something or they've been physically damaged by your dog or whatever, when someone makes a complaint against you and someone comes along and investigates you, I don't think ignorance is going to be a reasonable defense because, like we said before, the information is readily available to you.
Yeah.
So there are so many modes of delivery of this information that I find it very unlikely that ignorance is going as a defense is going to get you anywhere, because especially if you're a professional, so if you're a professional, if you're volunteering in a nursing home and that sort of stuff, and you'd be like, I don't know, like, ugh. But if you're a professional, you know, allied health, education, whatever, I think that the standard for you is that you don't just do things that you don't know how to do. I think we were all taught that. You don't just do things. You don't just make shit up at work. That's not the professional standard of our working roles, is not that you rock up and make shit up. I don't think that's ever been the case in our professional settings.
And so I think you really need to think about the source of your information as well. And a lot of the work that I do with schools, they ring other schools. Oh, you've got a dog. What did you do? And that's your source of information.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They might have some good information. They might have been flying blind. So mm-hmm. then you've got blind leading the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And then another school rings and goes, these two schools are doing this. So I think you need to really look at a good quality source of information and get multiple sources of information.
Yeah. Consult professionals in the field. You know, they're around, there are people around that you can consult. It doesn't have to be us. So, you know, don't think that just because you've been listening to us carry on for an hour and whatever, and you've decided these two aren't it, that's fine. It doesn't have to be us.
Totally fine.
It can be another professional in the field, in the industry, I just don't think it can be nobody. I don't think that's a good call. I don't think that's a good idea. Do you know what I've been doing? Webinars on eco-psychology and outdoor practice, things like that. Those exist. Eco-psychology is interesting. There's a lot of parallels. You could probably call animal assisted therapy eco-psychology, really, a version of it. But this is the thing. So the point that I'm making with that is that, hey, so like there are webinars that exist on these topics. And so I think it's important to continue to seek out professional development in the fields that you're working in, and outdoor psychology practices or outdoor practice, and eco-psychology and things like that are connected to what we're doing. So even if you can't find a heap of animal assisted or therapy dog PD, there's other PDs that are related. So yeah, just be aware of that as well. They're like they'll be our cousins, eco-psychologists. Okay. So last thing should we talk briefly a little bit about APRA? A little bit more? Best practice?
We can. I haven't had the experience that you've had with APRA, but there's certainly, I think that it's growing and evolving, and the amount of regulation we have in that space. You have to follow the rules. You've got to jump through the hoops. You've got to pay the exorbitant. No, am I allowed to say that? It's a lot more expensive to register with APRA than it is the Queensland Teachers College. Thank you, Queensland Teachers College. I'll do a shout out for the affordable registration costs. But it's an industry body. It's another one that's going to be checking, because we're working with a vulnerable client group. And I think that's really what APRA is representing and why they take it so seriously is everyone that's offering service under APRA, and that's medical practitioners and quite a few allied health fields, they are representing the rights and best interests of a vulnerable client group, whether it be physical, mental health related services.
I think I've told the story about APRA on the podcast before, but just a short version for anybody who maybe this is the first podcast you're listening to. Yes, I did get an APRA notification and it sucked. If anyone's had one, which like I've supported a few people, other people who have, because it sucks. It's not a very good system. It's not very supportive of the person who's been had the notification, FYI. I actually had a pretty good experience with APRA, in that mine, I didn't have to go, I provided, so you get a notification. I got two. So one for the same thing. One got stuck at the health ombudsman there and they dealt with it. So it actually goes to the health ombudsman, and then they decide whether or not to escalate it to APRA. So two people made the same, they collaborated or whatever, and made the same complaint and put them into the health ombudsman. One got escalated to APRA, the other one didn't. And when I spoke to the person from the health ombudsman, they were like, I just do not know why that other one got escalated. Like I don't think it should have. This is years and years and years ago. And it was honestly a blessing in disguise, because like these things that have happened have really helped me understand you cannot just do whatever you want. Like that it is, you have to understand that you will be held accountable for things that you do. So anyway, the one that went to APRA, I had a pretty good experience with them. Like I was like, oh, well, that's BS. And it was the complaint. The notification was found by APRA to not, and the health ombudsman, the other one, the health ombudsman, to not require further investigation once I provided my 70-something pages of evidence that I had. So the guy from APRA was like, when I first like responded to it, he was like, he got back to me and he was like, I'm just going to defer this to next month because I think you need to provide more information. And I was like freaking out. And then that's when I like took it like, whoa, like, and I went and collected everything. Anyway, so he was nice to me, which was good. Both, you know, I responded to the notification to both. Both found cool, like no further action required, right? Cool. There was made up stuff in the complaints. They saw through it. Great. Excellent. Good experience. Like it was horrible because it's very, very stressful, but worked out okay for me. Now, APRA hold the power. So if you are an APRA registered practitioner, they have the power to discipline you, and they can make up whatever that is. So they might suspend you. So you can't work as a psychologist or whatever is, you know, they will suspend you. They can make you do extra training and supervision. They can strike your license and ban you from practicing as a psychologist or whatever you are, and related fields they can ban you from as well. So big, big, big consequences. Yeah, big deal, big deal. So when you consider your day-to-day practice, you do need to be considering APRA guidelines. And yes, they are hard, like Amy said, they can be hard to follow because they're not black and white. Some of them are, but some of them aren't. So that's why we keep coming back to this term of best practice. And I don't think that best practice is walking around thinking that you're unregulated and you can do whatever you want with this dog at your clinic doing animal assisted therapy or whatever you're calling it. I don't think that that would be best practice. I think that best practice would be arming yourself with the professional development that's required to move into a new scope of practice. That's what I think. So that's not what I got reported for. It was by people whose dogs didn't pass the assessment. So that probably provides some context around, oh, maybe one of their dogs did pass. I can't remember. Anyway, it's like years. It was like our first year of business. Anyway, so I can't give you any more insight into what APRA thinks about animal assisted therapy because I haven't had to answer that question. I just had to answer questions about other stuff related to, I actually really didn't need to answer to APRA. Like that's why these things got chucked out is because the stuff that, yeah, it was silly. But anyway, so I can't provide any further insights into that as what they think about animal assisted therapy. There is you can Google these things, but anyway, but I just think that best practice is probably not saying it's unregulated, so you can just do whatever you want. I don't think, but anyway, that's my opinion. It's my opinion. So I don't know. Okay. So hopefully that's given people something to think about. Hopefully Zoom AI meeting summary is going to summarize all these points for us and make some sense of it. And yeah, I strongly encourage people to do some reflective practice. This sounds ranty and things like that, but we're not targeting this at anyone. I know there's plenty of people out there who just haven't really thought about this, or they've got bum advice from someone else who just has been telling them do whatever. I put this information out there, not so that we can just sell you courses. You know, we obviously need to sell courses so that we can run our little business, but that's not the point. The point is that the podcast topics that we cover are usually questions that we get asked quite regularly. And, you know, we get asked these questions via email a lot, or sometimes, you know, they'll ask Emily on the phone these questions. And to really give a proper answer takes a couple of hours, like we have just spent here sitting and discussing. So this is really, if you've been referred to go and listen to this podcast by us because you've asked this question, we appreciate you asking the question. So it's only by hundreds of people asking me this question that I've been able to conceptualize and develop this answer, as well as my own personal experiences. And also we've obviously been triggered by this investigation thing that's happened with the therapy dog puppies and all that sort of stuff. So timely time to have this conversation. Prepare yourself, do some reflective practice. If you think you've got enough information that you don't need to further your education in this way, great. That's good. Like, we're not talking to you then. The people that we're talking to are the people who haven't been armed with any further, any professional development or information in this field. They haven't had their dogs trained and assessed, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't know how to answer these types of questions. We're talking to you and just letting you know, like, hey, there is a fair bit to it. And, you know, our goal is that all of us are providing a standard of service that means that we're probably not all going to get shut down when something goes pear-shaped or be unable to buy insurance.
Yeah. Well, the outcomes are the goal, the good outcomes for the dogs, good outcomes for clients, and you not having a stressful career because you're spending all your time responding to complaints.
Or no career left.
Everyone wins. Win-win for everyone.
All right. Thank you, Amy, for hanging out with me today.
Thank you. Lots of fun.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure you like and rate and subscribe to the podcast if you've been listening to it and finding it useful, because I think that helps others. Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.